Good morning. The pivotal labor unions in Egypt, how important are they to the pro-democracy movement that we've been following for the last 17 days?
And do they function in any way the same as labor unions do here in the United States?
Or even in the pro-democracy movement that took place in the 1980s in Eastern Europe, beginning in Poland, where the Solidarity movement was a hugely important factor in bringing down the government of General Jaruzelski, a dictatorship inside the communist bloc. The pivotal nature of unions and whether they control the economy or not. Aya El Sayed is a research analyst with Rubini Global Economics. She focuses on the Middle East and North Africa. Aya, good morning.
Good morning.
You're in London. From your perspective, how much of the Egyptian economy can these three unions that are involved now in the uprising actually control? And the Suez Canal, I gather, would be the first on the list.
If we start by talking about the Suez Canal, let me just tell you that the Suez Canal traffic should not be disrupted by what is going on at the moment, because what is happening is just linked to the waterway, but it doesn't have to do anything with the operations of the canal. This is the first thing. The other important thing is that the current labor movement that is happening right now has happened independently rather than under the labor unions of Egypt. So it's just thousands of workers from different companies in different factories, including telecommunications, pharmaceuticals, textiles, weaving, cement and iron, all sporadically started on Tuesday afternoon, striking and staging sit-ins or walkouts from cities all over Egypt.
Aya El Sayed, a research analyst with Rubini Global Economics. It's very, very interesting, the idea that what she's saying there is that this is a grassroots sort of impulse of workers joining with the pro-democracy demonstrators that we've been talking about for the last 17 days. Lawrence Weschler now joins us, covered Poland and Eastern Europe for The New Yorker for many years, currently the director of the New York Institute for Humanities at NYU and the author of The Passion of Poland and Everything That Rises, a book of convergences. Len Weschler, do you find some of the parallels with Poland inescapable here, or are there differences we should be noting?
Well, obviously, I think about it a lot, just as I just said, this is not labor unions. This is, in other words, in both countries, you had official labor unions who were parts of the regime, and what you're having is, in fact, a parallel movement developing, and that was true in both places. And a major difference between 1980 and this is that this didn't start in the workers' movement. It started effectively in what in the equivalent of Poland would have been the students' movement. It was a youth movement that then got joined by labor. It's one of the things that happens in regime after regime, including even like the Nixon regime, playing off intellectuals against workers, and you know, you can always get hard hats to beat up on the students because they don't understand what's going on and so forth. And what happens in these amazing moments, as happened in Poland in 1980, is suddenly they come together. And that is something I'm thinking about a lot.
Well, and Lawrence, we just heard from a protester, Ahmed El-Ghadi, who said that the labor unions were only brought into the fray because the government was using the labor unions against the protesters, and therefore it forced the labor unions' hands. That sounds like it supports exactly what you're saying.
Not the labor unions. I mean, in other words, the labor unions are part of the regime.
Right.
But
and that is an interesting
independent things happening, which is quite astonishing.
That's an interesting parallel with Poland. But if we were to carry the Poland sort of parallel out, the response ultimately to Lech Wałęsa and the Solidarity movement in Poland was a martial law crackdown. Let's talk about that and how the economy was held hostage in Poland for quite some time.
Well, another example I'd use with Poland and thinking about this more broadly is that in Poland, Solidarity, this group of workers who had been, or parenthetically, you had these people organizing for years and years and years and nothing happened, and then suddenly something happens. And they themselves couldn't exactly explain why it happened then as opposed to some other moment. But the point is, they would call themselves an expression of the subjectivity of the Polish nation, by which they meant its capacity to act as the subject of history instead of the object of history. And what you had is that people who had been treated like objects, like little bricks in the wall, suddenly demanded to be treated like subjects. People who had been the object of other people's sentences suddenly demanded to be the subject of the sentence. And that's what a revolution is when that moment happens. What repression is taking people who are acting like subjects and turning them back into objects. And resistance is refusal to let that happen. And so that along the, that's the next 5 years. That's what you're going to be seeing.
And that's the battle we are seeing on the streets of Cairo right now, which is why the demonstrations are so ostensibly patriotic, with the waving of Egyptian flags, these people claiming that, no, we are the legitimate voice of Egypt. A.L. Said, research analyst at Roubini Global Economics, if there is martial law in Egypt as a response to unions and workers being so involved in the uprising, first of all, could the government actually pull that off, and would that be a negative?
It will definitely be a negative if this happens, and there is a martial law that can come in place. But you have to understand that also, just as one of the protesters has just mentioned earlier to you, that the labor unions in Egypt are co-opted, in fact, by the government, which might explain why first, when they started protesting, it happened almost 2 weeks after the beginning of the anti-Mubarak protests. And when they protested, they were more towards asking for salary raises and an increase in their minimum wages. However, it is very interesting that they have been timed to support the pro-democracy movement that has been taking place right now. They are more experienced than most of the youth that are protesting at the moment. They have been doing it on a regular basis since 2004. Since 2004, almost 3,000 labor actions, ranging between strikes and demonstrations, have been taking place, involving more than 2 million workers. And these actions are among the few that managed to get concessions from Egypt's ruling regime without the use of armed police violence, but rather were always met with negotiations from the government.
Well, it sounds as though the pro-democracy movement has somehow merged, so that in Egypt's, perhaps, for the protesters, democracy means better labor practices, better wages, and a better standard of living.
Very much so. Very much so.
So, Lawrence Wechsler, what do you think is next here?
I was actually thinking that one possibility is indeed a kind of imposition of martial law, and in much the same way in Poland as in Egypt, the army was thought of as the nation's army and so forth, but was at a certain point used to impose martial law. I think, frankly, a more scary prospect is the Romanian prospect.
Right.
It wasn't the army; it was the intelligence services that does a coup.
And that still is playing out in Romania. Len, we're going to leave it there. Lawrence Wechsler covered Poland and Eastern Europe for The New Yorker for many years. A.L. Said, research analyst with Roubini Global Economics. Parallels in Poland certainly has my mind swimming. Lawrence and A.L., thanks.
Thank you.